Oh, we don't believe in deadlines.
We don't. Okay. This is great stuff, and thank you for jumping in. We talked about, Mother Mullaney and I, about, you know, this is a fascinating subject, and Mother Mullaney and I both are very passionate about everything is connected. You know, I went to school at Berkeley long ago thinking I wanted to be a constitutional historian, and my focus was on Alexander Hamilton and the origins of the American system. And before I left Berkeley, I was a 12th century medievalist, because, you know, you just, everything, you go back farther and farther in time. But enough about me. I want to make sure we do talk about restorative justice a little bit, because I've talked about our current problem. I'm going to read you the definition of restorative justice by this author. It's a process to involve, to the extent possible, those who have a stake in a specific offense, and to collectively identify and address harms, needs, and obligations in order to heal and put things right as possible. I emphasize that last clause. Restorative justice is all about identifying the harm and amending it, making amends. It's about restitution. Its primary focus is on the victim rather than in our current system. The offender, the victim, they all really get lost. It's about something abstract. You violated a law, so we need to punish you, and we're going to lock you up. And sometimes locking people up is actually a good thing, and it can be helpful. But most of the time, the evidence suggests, people don't get rehabilitated. They don't change. They don't have any sense that they did anything wrong, and they do only in the rarest of occasions. Is the victim who was harmed, is that harm rectified? And so restorative justice is squarely focused on remedying the harm. There are only three places in California that are actively rolling out restorative justice models in the criminal justice arena. And this whole state and the professionals of the community are watching these places very closely, because amazing things are happening. It's actually been going on for 30 years down in Fresno in the juvenile criminal court. San Francisco has a neighborhood court. They've been doing this, I'm not sure how long, several years. I got pulled into this when we came back to California last year. I hadn't moved to the Valley yet. We were in Davis, and they started the third, two fingers I held up, the third operating restorative justice model in California. They have something over there called the Davis Neighborhood Court. And the Yolo County Courthouse is just clogged with criminal cases, 5,000 a year over there, of which 20% are out of Little Davis. And most of those involve relatively minor offenses, but with perhaps serious implications. A lot of students that get drunk and do things they shouldn't, including getting drunk to begin with at age 18. There are a lot of victimless crimes, victimless in the sense that nobody got robbed, no property was damaged except community property, or the offense happened on public land. And so just in the last couple months, they've started doing this court where the cases are being referred to this court for resolution. Everybody has to agree to make it happen. So from the very beginning, both offenders and victims are pulled into the process as opposed to being excluded to make it happen. And I was fortunate enough to have been involved in the beginning and to have mediated a number of the cases that came up at the beginning. And I don't know if we're going to have time to talk about those specific examples, but I was already engaged in alternative dispute resolution process and mediating when this restorative justice thing opportunity came to me. And I was just amazed at what I saw. The first thing I noticed about it is the whole idea underneath it is that it's based on very old ideas of what wrongdoing means and what the real impact is. I mean, underlying the understanding of wrongdoing is an assumption about society. that we're all interconnected. What is a crime? A crime, in this way of thinking, is a violation not of a law, but of people and of relationships. This is the really important part to me. Crimes put a ripple out there in the ether at the molecular level, and we are all affected, whether we know it or not. When violations occur, they create obligations, meaning the obligation for there to be a corrective action. And the central obligation is to right the wrongs. So the restorative justice system, and by the way, there are an infinite numbers of ways that it's practiced. San Francisco, Fresno, Yolo each has a different, very different model. I'm not going to get into those details. They're all about the identification of the harm and how do we put it right. It's a collaborative process, and therefore, by its very nature, it's healing and transformative. In restorative justice, we focus on needs and roles. You know, what are my needs? What was my role and what happened? Starting with the victim, but we look at the victim, the offender, and the community. Each of those three parties, and sometimes you only have community and offender, has needs and a role to play. You know, for victims, and this is where if I had to pick one thing that our current system just doesn't do well at all, and is they don't give the victim what they really need. They need, and what I think they need information about what really happened, why, and what's it mean for my future. They need to hear some real truth-telling rather than watch as a bunch of lawyers argue about what is going to be said in front of a jury. They need to be empowered. You know, I mean, if any of you have been a victim of a violent crime, or even if not a personally violent crime, but, you know, if you've had things stolen out of your car or your home, it's terribly debilitating. People go home and put on bars on the windows and never leave their place again. We need to empower them to get over that. And then the last bit is restitution. Victims need restitution. They need to be made whole as much as it is possible. You know, if your child has been shot dead by a drive-by shooting, we can't bring that person back. But there are things we can do to address the very real harms.
And these Afghanis came over, and when that soldier who had wiped out a village went to prison, they said, that's not justice. He went to prison for life. That's our justice. It's not their justice. He should have been taken out, had his head chopped off. So, I mean, I don't know if we have a...
That's not a restorative justice model.
What's that?
Their alternative,
yes,
was not a restorative justice model. It's much more like ours. They just... Or animated by
fair trial,
punishment.
Take them out and hang them.
Yeah.
But what I'm getting at is, what kind of consensus is there as to what restorative is?
Well, that's to the parties to decide. Mother Tabitha, did you?
Yes, I do.
Please.
Okay. What about the perpetrator? You know, the perpetrator, it seems to me, they do something. And the punishment doesn't often fit the crime. Or if it fits the crime, it fits it to such an extreme that it basically destroys the person and turns him into something that he probably never intended on being because of maybe a misthought or a mis... you know, gone astray. I mean... I have a friend who is he's mentally incapacitated. He's I don't know what they call it now. There's a new terminology, but he's mentally handicapped, and he has the thinking of like a 10-year-old child. And his brothers were all gangsters. I mean, the kind that would do almost anything you could think of doing. And they would use him because they taught him how to drive, to drive the getaway car when they robbed banks. And so he wound up in prison. Just like a prison, you know, like a really horrible criminal. But he was a 10-year-old kid that was, I want you to do this. And he spent 15 years in prison and finally got out. And fortunately for him, he had been corresponding with an Orthodox priest who, when he got out of prison, he bought a bus ticket with the money that he got. He came to California, and he showed up on the front door of this Orthodox priest's house and said, I don't want to go back to Texas because I don't want my family to send me back to prison anymore. Will you find a place for me? Can I live with you? But, I mean, where was the justice in what happened to him? Who, I mean, he was a victim too.
Your timing is perfect, because my next item is to talk about the offender. But even beyond that, you just said something incredibly powerful on multiple levels, and I'm not going to try to replicate everything you just said, but my personal reaction to that entire story is, if I'm an Orthodox Christian, I cannot condone or support a system that generates that result. Our system, our current system, says if you are in the room when something bad happened, we have a checklist that says you go to prison. Now, that's in gross terms. There are mechanisms that are in place to try to prevent that result, but yet you have stories like this. That result never would have occurred in the restorative justice model for a lot of reasons. But that's a story that is about right and wrong, and the emphasis on the thing that is being worshipped is not something human, but something abstract. A law was violated, you were there, you have to pay. And I would argue that that sequence does nothing for whoever were harmed in the underlying activity. Doesn't do anything for the offender. It doesn't do anything for our community. In fact, it's a cancer on our community. If we allow people to get locked up for bad reasons, that is something we should all be concerned about. So the three parties in a restorative justice community, we talked about the victims, the offender needs to be held accountable. Okay, he needs accountability. He needs encouragement to experience personal transformation. And he needs support from the community. And, when appropriate, he needs to be restrained. There are people that either, for one reason or another, I'm not coming from a place that says we should abolish prisons or be soft on crime. Not at all. That's not what restorative justice is.
Well, the question becomes, does it work?
That's right. The question is, you know, why do we lock up more people per capita in this country than anywhere else? What is going on with that? And is it, you know, are the results getting any better? And, you know, what's, you know, this is why we could have many sessions to talk about this. But
the point is, does restorative justice in the paradigm, the model that you gave, is it proven to work better than this lousy system that we have?
In my experience, yes. Okay. And the evidence is, interesting, I'll just very briefly touch on origins of restorative justice, which come from Christian tradition and also Aboriginal traditions around the world. The restorative justice model has been adopted wholesale in Australia and New Zealand, which, by the way, are heirs to the Anglo-American system.
Yes, right.
They're doing it. It's being done in South Africa. It kind of came around the horn and back to the Western Hemisphere, first in Canada about 30 years ago, and then it began to blossom, interestingly, around the country where there are Mennonite communities. The author of this book is a Mennonite, and I don't know a lot about the linkage, but their approach to things and their...
The who?
The Mennonite.
Oh, yeah, the Quakers that started prisons in Pennsylvania.
And one of the interesting, to give you a specific example, down in Fresno, where they've been doing juvenile, they've had restorative justice in the juvenile criminal system for 30 years, the rates of repeat crimes plummet. There is actually an enormous amount of objective evidence that shows. And why is that? Because we want to hear what's going on with you, offender. Why did you hit that person in the head with a hammer? And if we discover that he was hit in his head with a hammer by someone throughout his life, we suddenly have a different understanding of what motivated him, which is not to excuse the act, which is not to suggest that there be no restitution or no punishment. Punishment is an element that can come into play in the restorative justice model. It doesn't throw it out at all. The focus is on the harm, and our first duty is to fix the harm, to restore the victim, to restore the community. So very quickly, what are the community needs? The community needs attention to their concerns as victims. If my neighbor gets burglarized and I'm fearful about my house, you know, what do we do? It's not easy to undo something like that, but we can do more than we're doing now. The community needs opportunities to build that sense of community and mutual accountability among each other, among all of us. Am I on the lookout for conditions that maybe underlying causes certain types of crime? And finally, to foster conditions that promote healthy communities, which gets us all the way back to, you know, the healing and the wholeness concept of justice. I'm going to end because I'm worried about how long we've gone. And I so appreciate everything that's been said. Now, I hope we have time to hear from some other people with a quick idea or just a comment that I think really goes to our Christian background, if you will. Governments impose order, but it is communities who make and keep the peace. Okay? All governments can do is maybe get the bullets stopped from flying around, but it's up to us as a bunch of interrelated individuals to behave in ways coming from a place of love and tolerance so that healing can occur and peace can blossom. And if Mother Melania thinks we have time, I gave you that little divorce background story and left you hanging with these people locked in the jaws of the criminal justice system. And my companion Jennifer, who's with us today, was on a restorative justice panel in Seattle who dealt with that case. Do you want to just really quickly say what happened and how it affected everybody and affected you? And do you want to come up here to do it?
No.